This is episode 404 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, October the 1st, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation of 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Ron. Privacy is a massive issue in this day and age. As technology evolves, so too does the ease and speed in which information can be accessed, disseminated and stored. The Attorney General recently released a discussion paper on possible changes to Australia's security legislation, with a particular focus on the interception of phone calls and internet traffic by our law enforcement and security agencies. The Attorney General says that the telecommunications landscape has changed significantly since our current laws were passed in 1979. New ways of communicating in the online world are emerging all the time, and gone are the days when a police force or a security agency could simply wiretap an analogue phone line if they wanted to listen in on phone calls. These days there's SMS, FaceTime, Skype, Yahoo Messenger, email and Twitter, just to name a few of the systems we use every day. Currently, there's nothing which legislates how long a telco or ISP needs to keep call data for. The government thinks there should be. Police forces and security agencies think there should be. But privacy advocates are vocally against any form of data retention legislation. We'll take a look at these issues in this week's show and try to separate fact from fiction.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Woolworths is sold for a paltry $20 million. Lena gives us a recap of Free Play, the independent games festival recently hosted in Melbourne. And Adam talks to Motorola about the launch of their three new Razer handsets. Right now, here's the man himself with this week's roundup from the Tech Talk news desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security hears submissions from stakeholders. Woolworths sells Dick Smith Electronics. Is there life after death for MySpace? And NASA finds exciting new evidence of water once existing on Mars. Welcome to Tech Talk News. A Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security is reviewing proposed changes to national security laws. A discussion paper, Equipping Australia Against Emerging and Evolving Threats, has been released by the Attorney General, the Honourable Nicola Roxon MP. The discussion paper is intended to focus on the committee's efforts on assessing what changes, if any, are needed to Australian security laws. Police forces and security agencies have criticised the proposals as being too weak, while consumer rights and privacy advocates have described the proposal as draconian. Commissioner of the New South Wales Crime Commission, Mr. Peter Singleton, said historical data should be kept to assist police in their fight against tech-savvy criminals.
We have criminals who will walk around town with a pocket full of SIM cards. They'll make one call, throw the SIM card away, make the next call, throw the SIM card away. Each of these is done on a different telecommunications service.
But a spokesperson for Electronic Frontiers Australia said the case for data retention had not been made yet. Here's Mr. Geordie Guy on ABC Radio.
The primary reason why this is such a frightening thing is that we don't have a single instance of the police being able to articulate a circumstance where a bad guy got away because they don't have these powers. So it really is, a grab for additional power that is literally foundless.
Telecommunications companies say the Attorney General's proposals would be onerous and that consumers would ultimately wear the cost, estimated at anywhere up to $700 million. CEO of the Australian Mobile Telecommunications Association, Mr. Chris Athelis.
The future has got to be more targeting. Better targeting, not just keeping an ocean of information just in case. To set up this system to hold securely enormous volumes of data for 2 years. That is our estimate, simply as a result of the volume of data required to be held.
The hearing in front of the Parliamentary Joint Committee is continuing. In other news this week, the retail electronics institution Dick Smith Electronics has been sold for $20 million. Anchorage Capital Partners, a private equity firm, will buy the entire business, including 4,500 staff and 325 stores in Australia and New Zealand. Woolworths has been trying to sell the troublesome business for some time, which has been underperforming in the highly competitive commodity electronics market. Anchorage says its intention is to maintain the store network and consider selective expansions in the future, as well as increasing online sales and expanding its product mix. But analysts believe that staff layoffs are inevitable and that it's unlikely all stores will remain open. The new owner of the early social network MySpace says the entire site will be rebuilt from scratch. Justin Timberlake is now the majority owner of MySpace after buying News Corp's share for $35 million in June last year. Analysts say that MySpace will need to offer something different to establish social media such as Facebook and Twitter to attract people back. Here's Associate Professor Alex Bruns on the ABC's PM program last week.
It's very obvious at this point that, you know, we've got the two major international social networks, Facebook, which is very much focused around strong social networks, people who are connecting with their friends and their family through the platform. And we've got Twitter, on the other hand, which is a more nimble, a simpler social network, which is really more about real-time communication and fast dissemination of information as well. And against that, I guess the question really is, what does MySpace have to offer that's different from either one of those?
MySpace now describes itself as a leading social entertainment destination powered by the passions of fans and aimed at a Gen Y audience. And NASA says it's found exciting new evidence of water having once existed on Mars. And not just water, but fast-moving waist-high torrents that could possibly have supported life. In a press conference last week, a NASA spokesperson said the Mars rover Curiosity had found rocks which had been subjected to a vigorous flow of water at some time in the last thousands or millions of years. Photos beamed back to Earth show what scientists believe is an ancient stream bed, showing rocks, pebbles and gravel with significant rounding. Scientists said this indicates the rocks were probably carried down a stream or river up to 40 kilometres before coming to rest in Gale Crater. The amazing images from Mars can be viewed at www.nasa.gov. I'm Dr. Adam, and that's your tech update for this week. Previously on Deep Space Nine.
Unusual show last week with half the crew away.
You haven't
listened to this week's yet, Carl.
Despite the Apple distraction.
Is Mark having a sign? Is that for real? Let me think about the physics of this.
These events are planned a long time in advance.
Good cover, Dr. Ron.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
The internet itself gives them a voice that they may have only had locally before.
What about Siri?
It's a mess. It's a really, really big mess.
There's a video too. You can actually see the plane crashing into the ground.
So you've got a little boy NAS.
Yeah, and a little girl NAS. And leave them separate.
Yak in the chat seems surprised that something has upset me.
For the money you pay, you watch it'll shrink.
The red is office, the green is Xbox.
Vote. Your country needs you, and the world does.
Well, you know what that is, don't
you? A-OK, 1, 2, 3.
Roger.
Base.
Over. It's getting silly.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
On Tech Talk Radio.
Hello there, welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm not Andrew McCollum, I'm Dr. Ron, I'm your host this week. It's great to have you on board, have you in, to have me and us in your iPod, in your car stereo, listening on one of Australia's fine community stations. It's very, very, very exciting. We're starting a hashtag Hash Where's Andrew. I think that's appropriate in the circumstances. Old man McCollum, he's buggered off. He's left us the keys to the radio station and said, here, do your worst. See what you can do. Destroy the joint,
now,
Lena.
Now we'll destroy the joint.
Now we'll destroy the joint. Absolutely. Lena Van Deventer.
Hello.
Tech Talk Radio's games correspondent, freelance writer, editor.
Hello.
Game developer, Doona Hog, apparently.
Yes, that's me.
And full-time mum. Most importantly.
Yeah.
How have you been?
Good. How about you?
I've been well. That's good. Haven't seen you for...
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Yeah. Free Play knocked me out.
Free Play. Tell us very quickly about Free Play, but we will explore it in more detail later in the program.
Free Play is the Independent Games Festival located in Melbourne, and it's a huge gathering of the minds from my favourite industry and culture. And I'll talk about it more later, but it's amazing, and my brain cannot hold any more in it.
I'm very excited.
After all that learning.
Did it all go well?
It did. It went really well.
Fantastic. Also tonight on the panel, PC expert, Linux and networking specialist, knower of all things Microsoft, small business server, Microsoft Exchange, Microsoft everything, and the voice of reason has been likened to the Rob Oakeshott of Tech Talk Radio. Graham Callaghan, hello this week.
Otherwise, and possibly more accurately known as the grumpy one.
Was that in the was that in the promo? I think you said. Oh no, someone in the chat room was surprised to hear that you weren't that you'd become upset about something. I think, is that right?
Yes, I think there's been one of our correspondents has referred to me in that way as well.
Oh, that's a bit unfair.
Is it?
Maybe it's cruel, but fair. But maybe it's cruel, but a little bit fair. I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly. How have you been, Graham?
I'm doing better than I was.
Now, yeah. You haven't been here for a couple of weeks either.
No.
No. What's the story there, Rory?
I had a minor health issue that needed to be dealt with.
I hope that you're back on track and back on your feet.
Yes.
You certainly are. You're in here, and that's the important thing.
I am.
Yay.
Yes. That's the important thing. That's very good. Very good indeed. If you're listening to us live, you can talk to the panellists, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. That's how to communicate with the panel while we're on air. You can also visit our website for links to the email newsletter and show notes and what's coming up and links to streaming services and all sorts of stuff. Stuff that's too numerous to mention, really. We also have a state-of-the-art feedback form, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
It is state-of-the-art.
Oh, it is. It has text boxes.
And a submit button.
How's that? How good's that?
Fancy.
A submit button, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Are you on Twitter, Lena? He asks knowingly.
I am.
How do we follow you on Twitter?
I'm Grass is Lena, L-E-E-N-A.
And Graham, for the first time listeners who want to hear more about what you have to say on a daily basis, I'm putting the pressure on you there, daily basis.
G-C-T-T-R, yes. I wouldn't count on daily, though.
You would on mine, though, and if you're squeamish or sensitive, perhaps not follow me on Twitter.
Would you say your Twitter account is NSFW, New South Wales?
Not necessarily not safe for work, but definitely 18 plus.
Mm. That's all right.
Because there's a few swears on there occasionally.
A few swears?
A few swears every now and then.
What about yours, Graham? Safe for work?
Mostly. except for that time I accidentally retweeted someone saying something rude.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Did you retweet without looking?
Well, I retweeted. I thought, oh, that's. I wonder what that button does on my new Twitter client that I didn't know what that icon meant. Oh. And I thought it would warn me or tell me what it did or something before it actually went ahead and did it. And it didn't.
Nope.
So I learned very quickly that it was the retweet button.
Experiment with the benign tweets. As a general rule.
Benign tweets. Yep. Just like your Twitter feeling.
Yeah. No.
Yes. No?
I think that's banal. More than benign.
Banal tweets. It's been an incredibly busy week in technology. There's currently a parliamentary joint committee sitting that's looking at, amongst other things, the introduction of data retention laws. So we'll be talking about that in detail this week. Apple has apologised for its new Maps product, which came out in iOS 6. But is it really that bad? Was it needing an apology? Some people think it was. Some people don't think so. Some people reckon it's fine how it is. And that's good too. So we
certainly strikes some people as being not very Apple. Are we allowed to comment?
Yeah, but please do. Yeah,
certainly strikes people as being not a very Apple thing to apologise at all. It's not something you would have expected from Steve Jobs when he was in that role.
Interesting.
Do you think, Lena, it's not a...
I don't think that's unfair to say that. I don't know whether it's necessarily a surprise that an apology's coming. Obviously, there's been enough people saying that they should apologise for them to feel like they should. And I guess I've never seen people get as mad about one specific little thing as they have about the maps. So that's probably got a lot to do with it as well. Usually people are just mad at Apple in general.
What?
Having never used Apple products before, they're very, very mad. Yeah, I think this one, they're mad about a specific thing, and that's that they didn't get to have something that they only knew existed 10 minutes before. They weren't allowed to have it.
I think the last time I've seen... Well, yeah.
Hang on, I'm missing the point of the issue here, I think.
The beef that seems to be the largest beef to do with the maps is the 3D maps don't work too well. The 2D, people are saying it's less accurate than the previous iteration, but it isn't as horrible as everyone says. The 3D, however, is a bit of a shambles.
Okay.
It's new, and you didn't know it existed until 10 minutes ago, so give him a break. It's like when they put internet on the... Have you heard Louis C.K., the comedian, talk about another not safe for work? Don't look that up at work. The comedian, he talks about how he was on a plane and they said, we've got internet on the plane. Everyone turn on your, you know, on the in the seat in front of you and
yay.
You go on the internet.
Yeah.
And then 5 minutes later it broke. And the guy next to him started chucking a tantrum. About, oh, this isn't good enough.
Dude, you're 38,000 feet above the surface of the Earth. You're travelling at close to the speed of sound and you never had internet here before and suddenly it's a drama.
He said, how quickly the world owes you something you didn't know existed until 5 minutes ago and you're in a chair in the sky and you're still upset. So it's that same sort of thing, I think. There's a bit of that going around.
But there was an awful lot of it's putting things in the wrong places and... You look up. I read an interesting story. Someone trying to look up the weather in New York, and they got the weather for New York, Texas, which is a tiny little place that no one previously knew even existed, except the people that live there.
That reminds me of when the iPhone 3 first came out, the 3G, looking up weather for Melbourne was Melbourne, Florida.
Yeah.
And not, yeah. So there's always those teething problems when something first comes out, I think.
Seeing as we're talking about it now, Apple Chief Executive Tim Cook apologised Friday to customers frustrated with glaring errors in its new map service, according to Yahoo News. In an unusual move for the consumer giant, Apple directed customers to rival services such as Google Inc.'s Maps instead. Interesting. I don't think I've heard this much fuss and bother about an Apple product since the whole you're not holding it right gate.
Which wasn't that long ago.
No, was it maybe 18 months ago or 2 years ago?
Something like that.
About 2 years ago.
Yeah.
With the iPhone 4. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, well,
this little buddy.
I think the issue is for a lot of people that they did have a good Maps application on the thing. That was based with the Google product. And that went away and got replaced with something that wasn't as good, even though Apple obviously are going to say that it's the biggest and the best and the most powerful and whatever else.
I think it's the groundwork for something really special, but it's just not special right now, and people want special right now.
Yeah,
people
particularly when they've previously had it.
And they're accustomed to the functionality of Google Maps, and they feel like that functionality has been taken away, I suppose. Woolworths sells Dick Smith Electronics, contrary to what I may have said in the opener. We had a... Did I say that Woolworths was sold? I might have misrecorded myself.
I'm sure it was an error made by a later editor of your voice.
We'll blame a sub-editor.
Yeah. That's tradition.
Seems to be the way to go.
For spare change, just $20 million, 4,500 staff and all 325 stores in Australia and New Zealand. So we'll talk about that a bit later in the program. And is there life after death for MySpace? Justin Timberlake seems to think
so.
The what? You what?
You what?
Is there life after death for MySpace?
Ah. Oh.
Did you not realise... Did you think MySpace was still alive?
Well, are
you
a MySpace user? I'd forgotten about it completely. I thought it died years ago.
You said, MySpace. Oh, I haven't heard about that for years.
People have been using it this whole time. A lot of musicians, especially indie musicians, have been using it.
Yeah, I went there once in about 2003, and it was... Yeah, 47 different music tracks started playing at once.
That's clever.
I haven't been back yet.
You could put more than one media player embedded in your page.
Yes, and they all start auto-playing when you go to the page. So it's good if you want to rapidly become familiar with an artist's work. You can hear all their tracks at once in the space of a minute.
You can play them all at once.
Yeah. It's very efficient.
And if you've got the technology, why wouldn't you?
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is how to communicate with the panel, and we've had a little bit of a mix. We've thrown everything up in the air this week, and we've said who's doing what, and guess what's not Dr. Ron doing correspondence this week?
I'll do my best Dr. Ron impression.
I know you will. I have absolute faith and 100% confidence in you.
Eric, our buddy in Finland, says, there you go, is my Ron impression.
Says.
One, says.
Two, three. Eric, the
hi, team. Please stop. You're hurting my ears. Oh, how appropriate.
he knew we would do that.
That was a
comment on my singing.
He says...
He wrote in preemptively to stop me from singing about him.
A lot of people do, Graham. We don't read them all out all the time.
Must be a Time Lord. He knew that was going to happen. The correct pronunciation of Nokia is Nokia. Unfortunately, the American CEO, Stephen Elop, doesn't say it correctly. Cheers, Eric.
Adam came back from the United States recently, and he was telling us it's Nokia. Everybody says Nokia in the United States.
They do. But Eric's from Finland.
Yeah, people do a lot of things in the United States that aren't quite right.
They also say tornado. No,
Tornado.
tornado. But Finland is where Nokia's from, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. So
yes.
I'm going to go with what Eric says.
Nokia is where Finland is from.
Finland is from Nokia. Yes.
Thanks for writing in, Eric.
Thanks, Eric, for clarifying that. We'll try not to say Nokia anymore.
Straight and narrow.
It was grinding his gears, I think. Or it was like,
so hang on, we have to say Nokia.
Nokia, yes.
Okay.
Don't say Nokia.
Okay.
Eric doesn't like
it. I can handle
that. Yeah.
Nokia.
Rob says...
Hi, Rob says...
Georgie off the bench. Brilliant review, lady.
Yeah, good work, Georgie.
I think I might be out of a job.
Georgie came in last week and helped Andrew and I...
Yeah.
Helped Andrew and me, I should say.
She talked about Game Masters.
She did talk about Game Masters, and she went there and played lots and lots of computer games and gave an excellent live impromptu review.
That's on the spot as well.
Yep.
That's hard, Georgie. Well done.
Good work, Georgie.
You're a way better games correspondent than I am. And maybe you can take over when I'm on maternity leave.
That'd be good. That'd be good.
I agree with Rob. Thanks, Rob. That was nice of you to say that.
Thanks, Rob.
Regular contributor... GJMCN.
GJ McN.
Says.
Says.
It's me being Ron. It's me being Ron.
See what it's like, and people correct you straight away.
I'm not even finished the pod, and I felt I had to write in. Uh-oh, this could go either way.
This, we know it's real, GJ, when he opens the correspondence like this.
In the US, there's a rising trend for people to fake a person to capture or friend someone else. The extension of this is to set up or target someone using an equally fraudulent identity to okay the collection of data on that person in a way that you sort of discussed about photo tagging. A person not on Facebook can be harvested for cause crime. I don't know what that means. Harvested for crime or cash, given wide open settings, and then become a kinda of a bot. GJ! Kind of a bot on Facebook, or just data or entries ported to that identity to slur, indict, or stalk an enemy or target. Oh, my. Be warned, Facebook is where all the crazies live.
Hey.
Ow.
Steady up there.
Harsh.
Big fella.
Harsh.
Who are you calling crazy?
That may be where some bots live. But he's got a fair point in there somewhere, and that is that if you know someone who in person says, I'm not on Facebook, I don't like Facebook, and then all of a sudden they add you, maybe check with them. You know, send them a text message or email them and say, hey, did you actually get Facebook or not? Because maybe someone's, you know, added them, become them as part of an identity theft type thing to try and get contacts or something.
This is like the Andrew McCollum Facebook page that we set up that he doesn't know about.
It's exactly like that.
You shouldn't do that. It's against Facebook's terms and conditions.
We do it for the lulls.
We do it for the lulls.
Not for any kind of... nefarious purposes.
Indeed.
Scott J says...
Says...
To be fair,
team.
Doing it for the lulls and not having any nefarious purposes. I've heard that excuse many times before.
We just shut down a government server for a few days and we
for
did it
lulls.
For the lulls.
That's exactly right, yes.
It's not illegal or anything.
Yeah, stole thousands and thousands of diplomatic cables just for the lulls.
Computer trespass. Come on.
What's that?
Lighten up.
Scott J says, hi, team.
All too seriously.
Hope the grumpy one...
Oh, that'd be me.
And the gamer girl.
That'd be you.
I assume you're talking about me. Are back on deck next week.
What we've established is that you're not the grumpy one, I think.
No, yes. But yes. I'm not grumpy.
Could be any of the other.
Perhaps Andrew's the grumpy one.
Maybe he is.
I can turn on a dime, though, mind you. Long-term listener and thought I'd drop you a line having just taken delivery of an iPhone 5.
Oh, good work, Scott.
Not a fanboy, just so you know. You don't need that caveat, dude. You just bought a phone.
Just bought a phone. That's cool.
I had an iPhone 4 on contract with Telstra and had been looking forward to the upgrade to include dictation and Siri.
Yes.
Having been using it for quick email replies via my wife's iPad 3.
Nice.
Or the new iPad. I drove to the Doncaster store at 9 a.m. on release day and was told they only had 16 meg white units left.
Yes.
I think he means gig.
16 gigabyte. Yep, 16 that's gigabyte. Easy mistake to make. It's like Woolworths being sold.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah.
Left for outright purchase. If I'd just like to join the queue, the line was around 1,500 people deep.
At Doncaster?
At Doncaster.
Are
at
9 you serious?
Mm.
That would be like out the door, down the escalator.
Up near Big W, past Big W and up near there, yeah.
How would you queue on an escalator? You'd have to turn it off.
I don't know. You'd have to turn it off. Otherwise, it's a good way to keep fit while you're waiting.
Or, yeah.
Hmm. He declined and drove to the Telstra shop near his work, where 30 people were lined up to purchase said phone. I got what I wanted, 16 gigabyte black, no contract, as per your advice in episode 3912. Have we done 3,912 episodes already? Who told me? No one.
Easy.
Within 30 minutes. So here I am in day two and using the new phone, and truth be told, there's not that much to report. It's faster, but the biggest thing I've noted is the battery life. I use my phone for texting, social media, eBay, Instagram, email, and stream or listen to downloaded podcasts and the occasional look at maps. Note my call usage is very low, thanks Viber/Skype, but my battery is struggling to last the entire day.
Mm.
The one downer is that my day begins at 5:30 a.m. That is a bit of a downer. Sorry, Scott.
5:30 a.m.?
5:30 a.m.
I didn't even realise there was a 5:30 a.m.
Me neither. And it ends at around 9:30 p.m.
Yeah, but it's when you go to bed, isn't it?
Yes. 5:30 a.m. is when you go to bed.
Potentially.
Then the iPhone 5 needs to be on the charging cable at 9:15. I wonder if this is the experience of other iPhone 5 users. Cheers, Scott J. Keep up the good work, and I'm glad you're now available through Stitcher. We've been on Stitcher for a while.
Yeah, been on Stitcher for a little bit. Yeah, but it's good that Scott's listening to us.
Good
you
found us there.
I've been playing around a little bit more with Siri on my iPad.
Good.
I have a third iPad.
Yep.
And I've got to say, the speech recognition component, I'm going to split it up into two components. Speech recognition, so it understands actually what you say, the words, and the second component, what it does with those words, how intelligently it manages your request, what it does. I think that the speech recognition is second to none.
Mm.
It gets... I'm yet to have it make a mistake, I think. So when I speak to it and I say, Siri, tell me what the weather's going to be in Melbourne tomorrow, it displays those words perfectly. So it's hearing what I'm saying. But the computational...
And then invariably it says, but I don't understand how to handle this query. Would you like me to do a web search for you?
Yes. Yes. I've stopped speaking to Siri conversationally and I've started saying, weather, Melbourne, Australia, tomorrow. And it goes bang, 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 and it always returns the right information. See, I always have the opinion you could talk conversationally to it because that was how Apple was advertising it when it first came out.
You
see people in the promos, like in their car going, oh, Siri, tell me if I can go to a birthday party tomorrow at 2 p.m. Mm. because I thought I had something else on. And Siri go, no, Lena, you don't have anything else on. You can go to the birthday party.
Yeah.
But I think you have to be a lot more succinct than that.
I always got Siri on his 4S. I've only got the iPhone 4, so I don't have Siri. But I remember when he first got it, he said, Siri, do I need an umbrella tomorrow? And she would come back and say, no, there's no rain tomorrow.
Oh, that's good. So, that's what I'm expecting.
Yeah, maybe there's just, you've got to learn some of the lingo or some of the particular phrases that might get you some information.
Potentially.
Potentially. Maybe you've got to speak Siri's language.
Got to speak Siri's language. Have you had Siri on any Apple devices, Graham?
Not myself, but my mother's iPad has it on now as of the update.
Cool. So she's gone from like iOS 5.1.1 or something up to iOS 6.
That's correct, yes.
Very good.
Just the other day.
Has she been using it? Has she had any success with it?
I don't think she's been using it.
It doesn't help with Plants vs. Zombies.
I don't think she quite understands Siri, to be perfectly honest.
Not many people do.
No.
It's okay.
It's a very specific skill set Siri has.
Indeed. Mm. Indeed.
Gary says...
Says...
This is a speed test for the iPhone 5 in Townsville on launch day.
Oh, what?
Very impressive.
What? What did he get?
He got 2609 megabit per second download, 2632 upload.
Woo! 26 megabits per second up and 26 megabits per second down.
Yep, and a ping of 49.
That's impressive.
Very impressive. Very, very impressive. That's at 6:45 p.m. on launch day. So they would have been having a bit of a crunch then too, you'd think. As for Siri, I tried the new launch app command to open the Twit app. The result was Siri reported that Tweet was not an app on the iPhone. However, I said launch the different word, very close, one letter changed, app. Then the Twit app would open.
Ah.
Can't say it on the radio.
That's okay. So we have to maybe modify our accents or our way of speaking a little bit. To use Siri at its optimum.
But that speed test is very impressive, I must say.
26 megabits per second. That's like almost 10 times faster than what I get at home in my ADSL 2 Plus.
Yep. At my old house, I got 2 megabit per second internet, ADSL.
You've got a direct pipe into the matrix now, though, don't you?
I do.
You?
I've got like 76 now.
Yeah, you're making that up. No, but I know you're not making it up, and it makes me wild with rage and insanely jealous.
Yep. Oh, well. The NBN will come along and change it all anyway.
Yeah.
Now, last week, when I wasn't here,
yes,
you covered these two items of Coro, but I wanted to know if I was allowed to add something.
Of course you can. Right. Of course you can. What was the correspondence we covered?
Carl, via the contact form.
Hi, Carl.
Had a bit of a beef about the iPod Nano.
Oh, yes. Yes, he did. He was bemoaning the shape and size and the new dimensions.
Yeah, to give you an idea of what he was saying, he said, "Now for one of my 'why does Apple do these things' rants, and it's about the new Nano. I cannot think what possessed Apple to redesign it as they have." Well, I've got a little idea for you,
What I think
might be the reason why they did. A lot of people wanted video.
Ah.
On their nanos. They wanted to be able to be on a treadmill at the gym and watch videos. So I think that might explain the expansion of the screen real estate, because for that tiny little square, you couldn't really get a lot of video on that.
Yeah.
So I think that might be what they've done there. Plus the original Nano, they've sort of gone back to sort of how it all started, which was that really thin rectangular shape. So for every change in tech, there seems to be someone annoyed and someone excited. So
you can't please everybody all the time.
No, you can't. And there are some people who I think will be really happy about this change. So, yeah, I thought I just should add that the video, I think, is the reason why they did that.
Is it fair to say that the Nano is marketed at sports people, people who go running, jogging, work out at the gym, people who take an interest in their, you know, they spend a lot of time, you know, maybe training or...
Yeah, I think it is.
Because of its size and...
And the Nike app and all that that's built in and all the sensors that they sell in the Apple shop.
That's right.
And all that. Yeah, I think it is pretty much for the gym junkies who might already have an iPhone or something like that. So they're familiar with the ecosystem and everything and want something that they're not scared they'll drop. Like their phone. So, yeah, but I think it's win some, lose some. And Jenny emailed us last week. Oh, no, on the contact form last week as well.
Refresh our memory with Jenny's.
She wanted to buy an iPad but didn't know which one was
right
for her.
That's right.
She wanted one to go overseas with.
Yes.
Didn't want a top-of-the-range product, something that's easy to use. What price range should she expect and which one should she go for?
That's right. Andrew and I shared some thoughts.
You covered it very well. But I've been in this mindset this week because I've helped two of my aunties choose an iPad.
So you have actually done this IRL.
I have. I've done this IRL twice this week because once one auntie heard the other auntie was doing it, she wanted to do it as well. So it was they called me for tech support for choosing, as I'm sure many of our listeners get someone in the family calling them up going, "What do I do? How do I? What even is this thing?"
Are you the go-to person in your family?
For Apple products, yes.
I'm gonna have a stab in the dark here and say Graham's possibly a go-to person in his family for technology issues.
I would imagine.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Jenny, I would recommend you going to the Apple Store to get an idea of the differences between all the different models, because the Apple Store is guaranteed to have pretty much all the ones available at the moment, whereas if you go into a reseller, they might just have one or two or the latest one or that kind of thing. So if you go into an Apple Store and ask someone to show you every iPad they've got, and the differences between each one, that'll help you feel a bit less overwhelmed about it, because there are a few things out there now and different iterations and different features and all that. So it can be really complicated.
Yeah, well, although that there aren't that many choices with an iPad. You choose the colour, you choose whether it has cellular or not.
Yep.
And you choose how much memory it's got. They're the only three choices you have to make.
Not really, because you have to choose whether you want the second iPad, the third iPad, and the size of storage, and, you know, for what you're going to use the iPad for, and whether you really need the cellular or not,
that we're not buying outdated technology and we're only going to buy the third one?
No, never assume that.
Okay.
Because the Apple Store's still selling the second version for quite a lot less.
A lot less.
And the screens are notably different.
They are.
I know everyone says, oh, it's the amazing, you know, resolutionary display, whatever the horrible word was that Apple invented.
Retina display.
To describe the new display. But it is, they are very, very different when you look at them side by side.
But if you like $400 more than you like the picture on your screen, then I think you're better off keeping that $400 in your pocket, personally. The main things I think you should consider when you're looking for an iPad and you don't know where to turn, do you think there's enough difference between the iPad 2 and the new iPad to justify the cost? If picture is important to you and you're going to watch a lot of movies lot of that kind of thing, then the Retina display will be worth it. But if you're not fussed, then picking up an iPad 2 for cheaper is probably your best bet. Depends on where overseas you're going. It might be cheaper to rely on Wi-Fi when you're overseas instead of going cellular. Buying a SIM card, yet another SIM card and yet another account to look after can sometimes be more hassle than it's worth.
On the other hand, having the internet built in does simplify using the thing. It means you don't have to worry about connecting it to another device or having a phone to connect it through and stuff like that.
That's true.
It means that you just switch it on and it works and you don't have to worry about it.
Yep, you do have to do your research, though, about whether your SIM card will work where you're going.
Oh, no, I wouldn't recommend doing that overseas. I'm talking about using it at home. Yes, yeah, overseas, you turn off the wireless and you only use the Wi-Fi. That's right.
Yeah.
You turn off the mobile broadband.
The other thing to consider when deciding between cellular or Wi-Fi, does your phone have a Wi-Fi hotspot? If you have a smartphone, it probably does. You can rely on this instead of 3G if you want to save some money. Depending on your data plan on your phone, make sure you've got enough data to actually share over two devices before you intend on doing that, because otherwise, ouch. it could be a price difference of $400 to $900. So that's why I think it's worthwhile looking around and getting the right device for you. And that's basically a total judgment call for you to make on your own. If you know the difference between all of them, and then you can look at your priorities and what you want to use it for, and then you can make your decision.
Absolutely.
But that's a lot of money difference, so I think you should really look into it. And don't
$500
just get the,
is $500. Yeah.
Don't just get the latest one because it's the latest one. It might not be right for you. The one before it might be better.
Hmm.
So, I'd go down to the Apple Store and have a look, ask them, you know, to give you the lowdown on all the iPads. I say to go there not because I'm a fan boy or girl, but because I think a reseller would push the 3G option because that's how they're going to make their money.
Yes, yep.
So you're probably going to get a more balanced idea of what everything is from either the Apple Store or even just looking online if you don't want to talk to a person or if you can't talk to a person. Look at the websites online like the Apple Store websites. They're usually very helpful. If you still don't know which way to turn after that, send me another email with some more details and I'll do my best to help you out.
Oh, there you go. That's a good invitation. Thank you, Lena.
Yeah, that's all the Coro this week.
Oh, you've done exceptionally well. And if people want to communicate with the panel, how do they do that, Lena?
feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
You are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, your host for this week's edition. Lena Van Deventer and Graeme Callaghan, able-bodied panellists.
Yes.
Andrew has... Well, he's missing in action. He's taken the keys and he's headed off. Well, no, he's left the keys because we managed to get in. We managed to press buttons and we managed to bring an addition to you this week, which is good news.
He was talking about us when we were
gone. Yeah, he was. Now, he was talking about me in my absence. Mm-hmm. He was talking about you when you weren't here. He was talking about Graeme when Graeme wasn't here.
He called the panel with him, Andrew and Mark, the A-team.
Is that right? Is that what he did?
So does that make us the B or the C-team?
I said we can talk about him now. He's not
here.
We can go to town.
I can make up rumours about
Hang on a minute. But Australia, the cricket team Australia, and then the second lot are Australia A.
Ah. Oh, good.
So
is that how it works?
Yeah, that's how it works. Good. So I'm sure that's what Andrew was thinking of.
Apparently he's getting an iPhone 5.
I heard.
Really?
I heard.
Where'd you hear from?
I heard from him.
He asks knowingly.
I heard it from him and he keeps denying it. So I'm calling you out on the radio, Mr. McCollum. You are buying an iPhone 5 and it's time to admit it. It's time to be okay with that.
It's time to reconcile your differences.
It's time to reconcile.
Embrace your inner fanboy.
So now we can make up, things about him while he's not here. Like once he came to studio and he had odd socks on.
I know. Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
And there's this one time he came in and his computer was already on and he pressed the power button thinking it was off and it turned the computer off.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I know. Right?
What a duffer.
I know.
We're not being as mean as he was to us. He said, no, he said that you and I eloped.
I know. I heard that. What's going on there?
There'd be some very upset people if that happened.
There's a lot less venom this edition than ordinarily we encounter, isn't there?
It is.
Oh, dear.
It's quite nice. Quite cozy.
I'm scared, ladies and gentlemen.
Don't worry. We won't elope.
No.
It'll be fine.
Everything's good. Everything's been sorted. Solicitors have okayed everything.
I've got a note here as well I wanted to remark. I was listening to the two shows that I missed. I was listening to them today.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because I particularly like listening to ones that don't involve my voice.
Yes, likewise.
And you were commenting on how Apple like to do the whole back shipping thing as part of the hype cycle and part of their marketing.
Oh, yes.
And people think that this is Apple's idea. Nintendo did it in the early 80s. They started doing it back then. So Apple shouldn't get the bad rap for that. I think it's been happening for a very long time.
I'm sure they're not alone. Yes.
I don't think I would ever claim that they invented it, but they're certainly masters at it. They do it reliably every time, and it works so well, everybody falls for it.
So why wouldn't you do it if it keeps working?
That's right. Why wouldn't you?
Isn't it fundamentally dishonest to say, there's much more demand than we anticipated, where in fact they anticipated the demand quite accurately and intentionally undersupplied it?
Yeah, they've launched, what, 7 iPhones now or something?
Isn't that dishonest to say that...
No, it's all part of
They know down to the last dozen units how many they're going to sell.
Yeah, they do. But I think it's part of the ceremony and the pomp and the circumstance and all that, and the showmanship of marketing.
So showmanship rather than lies.
It's not a lie.
Isn't it a lie?
If they
know it's not true and they say it anyway?
No, it's not a lie.
That's not a lie?
Ethics and in advertising and marketing, that would be a good discussion.
But we need novel.
We'd need a 3-hour show.
We would need a 3-hour program dedicated to just that.
Mm.
What I'd like to do now is talk
Tech
about...
Tech Talk Gruen, everywhere you need
Tech
it.
Talk Gruen. Yes, yes, we're all fans of the Gruen on ABC, Gruen Transfer. I'd like to talk now about some technology issues that have happened during the week. A somewhat serious issue that we need to give a small amount of time to, and that is Melbourne... And indeed all of Australia, probably most of the country and parts of the world, have been absolutely rocked by the disappearance last week of 29-year-old Julian Maher. Mm. She was an ABC employee. On Friday, a 41-year-old man appeared in court in Melbourne, and he was charged with Julian's rape and murder. Julian was an employee at ABC Radio. The case has received an enormous amount of attention in mainstream media.
And on social media.
Yeah. And on social media, exactly, especially Facebook and Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Police have said that the extensive social media campaign to find Ms. Maher had helped in the investigation, and her family acknowledged the role that social media had played in the search for her. But what I want to talk about is just as social media helped the investigation, for example, by circulating still images from the CCTV footage and getting the word out, police are now concerned that comments being made on social media could hamper a successful prosecution.
That's right. Very easily, too.
Very easily. We have to be very careful here about what we say because the matter's now before the courts.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing that anyone here wants to do is to prejudice the court hearing in any way.
Mm.
Victoria Police on its Facebook page today said, please remember that it is inappropriate to post speculation or comments about matters before the courts. We ask you to refrain from posting anything on social media which could jeopardise or endanger the presumption of innocence, as this has the very high potential to interfere with the administration of justice. I was saying to Lena in the green room just before the start of this week's program, in Perth recently we saw, at the moment still running, as a murder trial which is being run as a judge only. There's no jury.
Wow.
And that's because it was determined for a number of reasons that an impartial jury simply could not be formed. The trial's is a former Crown prosecutor who's been charged with the murder of his wife, and his wife was a registrar at the court. They're phoning in the judge and the prosecution team from another state, so there's no accusation of bias on either side.
Goodness.
In the UK recently, a juror was dismissed after she decided she couldn't work out if a defendant was guilty or not guilty and decided to run a Facebook poll.
Oh, goodness.
Asking her friends if they thought...
Oh, jeez.
The accused was guilty or not guilty. Are people really that ignorant, and it's incredibly frustrating. But we just need to put the word out that we can talk about things. Mm. We can go to the pub and we can talk to our mates. We can sit in the privacy of our own lounge room and discuss things. Mm. But when we put something online, whether we think we've got privacy settings turned on or not, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter or Tumblr or anything else,
it's still publishing it.
You're publishing comments.
Mm. And it can be read by anyone.
It can be read by anyone.
I think a lot of people won't understand the legal ramifications of making comments about somebody who's accused in the situation we have right now, because and they won't understand how radically the legal situation changes once somebody is charged, which you and I understand, but a lot of people won't think through the issue that far. They've been highly involved in the campaign of trying to find the information about what's happened.
Yes.
And they want to continue that involvement in
I think that's the thing, isn't it?
In the
they
story.
They were invested.
Exactly. That's a good word. They're invested into the story, into the...
And they're mad. And we're all mad. But if you're really mad...
Mad as in angry.
Yeah. Then not, mad to be, yeah. You know, be mad enough to be quiet.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this needs to run its course.
And that's quite true. I mean the example of that juror that in the UK that you referred to, that's an extreme example. We're not talking about anyone who's gone quite that far.
No, not in the case of what's happened in Melbourne. So let's talk just generally about it rather than specifics with specific cases. Let's talk generally.
Well, we've got to be careful to do that, of course,
because
someone's been charged and they're entitled to due process.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's because we see social media as such a part of our lounge room and a part of our lives, and we, you know, there's the joke that everyone tweets about their lunch. They don't consider they're publishing about their lunch.
Mm.
They're sharing with their followers and their friends and their family what they're having for lunch. So it's a very personal thing. And I think it's really blurred the lines between the difference between an online conversation being published and the chat in the pub or the chat in the lounge room.
And people think that it's just an extension of that, and it is in many ways. Whereas, you know, if you were meeting up with somebody and say, hey, how you doing? Going good, yeah, going well. What'd you have for lunch? Oh, I had a BLT and it was awesome and I got it from the pub down the road. Or, oh, yeah, that's cool. I'll have to check that out. And they, twit-pick or do all that online. But as you say, Lena, they're actually publishing that information and it becomes publicly, you know, viewable. Even if you think you've got privacy settings wound up really high and it's just to within a small group of friends, nothing's stopping anyone from doing a screen grab or, you know, running Snippet or whatever that little Microsofty app's called and just doing quick click and drag and saying, hey, look what I saw Lena say. This is a bit rude. What do you reckon? And paste that into my Facebook timeline. Once something's on the internet, it really is, it's there. And it's you can't contain, or it's very difficult to contain something once it's been put online.
Definitely. And when there's something like Facebook and someone says a defamatory remark about an alleged criminal and then it gets 2,000 likes, you know, it's very, very easy for their defense team or their, you know, someone to say, hey, that's 2,000 people who think this way.
And if that's a sample of the community, then, look at the effect this could have on fairness in selecting a jury from a jury pool.
Exactly. There's Melbourne's big, but not that big.
There's
only so many people eligible to be on a jury. So it's...
Yep. And even as there is, there's not going to be a lot of people who aren't very aware of the exact circumstances of what's going on.
Yep, that's absolutely right. Mm. Yeah.
So we've got to be careful.
The ABC... But what do we do about it?
That's
the other question. I mean, Facebook is not based in Melbourne.
No, it certainly is not. And we'll talk about that in a moment, too.
Twitter and I mean, what can we do? I mean, if there's stuff on Facebook...
Anytime I've seen in the last week or so something that I think someone shouldn't have written, I've told them. That's my one thing that I can say that I've done... From on the grassroots kind of level, I've informed them about contempt of court and you know all this kind of. Do you realize what you're doing? You could be actually doing the exact opposite of what you're aiming to do, and that's all I can see myself personally doing. But I think as a community, we can do a lot more.
Are we not crediting the average person with enough intelligence to be unbiased?
Well, that's for the court to decide during jury selection.
That's right, yeah.
That's not something we can deal with.
Do you think the court's concern is valid, or do you think they're... Is the community overreacting, or is this something that is really a big problem? I think it's a big problem, but in reality, like you're saying, Lena, Melbourne's big, but it's not that big, and you do have to select a number of people from a jury pool. But should we then say, well, look, these are intelligent people, they've been selected for a very important job, can we rely on them for the most part to ignore everything that they've heard or read and focus on the facts that are presented to them in a court case?
I'd like to think by the time it got to that stage, yes. If you did a scoop of your Facebook list, maybe not. You know what I mean? If you just got anyone, but if you've made it all the way through to your say being required in the courts, I'd imagine it's because you've got a pretty good head on your shoulders and you know the rules and you know how everything works.
It's something that courts are going to have to come to terms with.
Yes,
and in particular, this case is going to bring it up. There's nothing surer that. The lawyers that talk to the jurors during a jury select, they get a chance to... During a court case, when they're selecting a jury, the lawyers for both sides get a chance to ask questions of the juror and to object to jurors being on the jury to some degree. There's rules about how many they can veto and so on, but that process has to be relied on to weed out the juror that is going to be the one who is irresponsible about their duties, like this one in
the UK
that you mentioned, and find the ones that are able to separate out their previous knowledge from the facts presented during the case.
Hopefully, so, it doesn't get to a stage where one of the the questions you're asked as a juror is, do you have Facebook? And if you say yes, they go, and you're out.
Do you have internet access?
Yeah, well, let's hope that the...
I hope it doesn't get that bad.
Well, that's where the courts and the legal system itself has to come up with ways to that are better than that to distinguish between good and bad jurors.
Mm.
And that's... I don't know where that drive comes from, whether that has to come from the judges or from... Or does it come from the government? Does it come from the
Law
Attorney
Reform
General's
Commission?
Department? The Law Reform Commission.
Yeah,
okay.
They're looking at this exact issue now, according to our Premier, Mr. Bailey.
Oh well, that's good. That's a good thing for them to be looking at. I hope they come up with some sensible recommendations.
It is. It's good.
So that's an inquiry that's underway, is it?
I don't believe so at the moment, but they're very aware of this being an issue, and they want to work out the best way to manage it and to establish some sort of framework.
Yeah, okay.
To protect.
Well, I hope they do run it as a major inquiry into what they should do, and to perhaps take submissions from lawyers and from the public and from
people who are
parties.
Informed.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly.
The ABC reported today that Facebook has refused a police request to take down a page with prejudicial comments about the man accused of the events of last week we're talking about.
And from Facebook's point of view, why should they? It doesn't breach their terms and conditions. It's not...
Doesn't it?
Well, this is the thing. I'll finish reading this quote and we'll talk about this. Victoria Police Chief Commissioner, Mr. Ken Lay, told Fairfax Radio that Facebook will not cooperate in removing the page and he's seeking legal advice. Mr. Lay said, though social media has been enormously helpful in this investigation, it's also been very, very difficult. And we had cause to speak to Facebook over the weekend and ask them to take a particular site down. Now they've refused to do that. Graham, Facebook is based in the United States. They're subject to laws of the United States.
Yep, and they're not based in Melbourne. They're not subject to the laws of the state of Victoria.
Do you think it would be in their best interests as good citizens, good digital citizens, to cooperate with police in other countries? Or... Well, obviously, Facebook don't think so.
That's a very difficult question because obviously, in this case, I'd like for them to be to act in a responsible way towards our courts because I believe our courts are reasonably fair in most situations. But it's an interesting problem for an organisation that's based in a different country that. The courts in every country are not fair. You can't trust the legal system in every country in the world. Where do you draw the line? Whose courts do you respect and whose courts do you not respect?
Well, it's very similar to some laws they've got in the United States. for, you know, the right to a fair trial and that kind of thing. So yeah. You'd think it wouldn't be too much of a stretch. It's not like they're asking them to obey Sharia law or something like that, something that's really, really, you know, on opposing sides. So you'd think that Facebook would say, well, we've got similar laws to that, and in this case, yes, we think that that's not helpful to anyone, so we'll pull that down. I think they should.
I understand that argument, and I agree with it to a very large degree, but I do understand that Facebook might have a wider concern.
It could be a difficult precedent.
Exactly.
That might be what's stopping them.
That might, or that's making them hesitate at least, yeah. Mm.
Americans have very different understandings of free speech.
Absolutely, yes.
And I'm sure Facebook would be looking at these comments and these pages and perhaps saying, well, we don't necessarily, as you're saying, Graham, under our terms and conditions, they don't violate any of our terms and conditions. There's no reason why we should take that post down or that page down.
Even in an American, I mean, even though the legal system in America is not that different to ours, it is different to ours, and these comments might not be as big of a bigger problem over there as they are to us.
Hmm. I'd get behind the free speech thing if this was actually free. But there's a huge cost, and I don't think it's worth paying.
Absolutely. Let's move on slightly. Project to find missing persons on 404 pages. So this is related to, obviously, the what happened with Gillian Maher last week. She's reported as a missing person, and the investigation found that, you know, the absolute worst possible horrid outcome was actually realised. There's an organisation in Europe, notfound.org, that says they are going to organise a system whereby if you hit a 404 page, which is an error page when you're web browsing, so you try to go to a page and the page isn't found, it doesn't exist, rather than just display an error message, let's put up a local picture of a missing person and say, you've arrived at this page in error, but while you're here, have a really quick look at this image. Do you recognise this person?
I love the idea, but I don't come across 404 pages nearly enough for that to be the best use of that kind of thing, in my opinion. I think I would much rather it have pride of place in your Facebook ads or something you look at every day, and your eye just turns to the right and you see this person missing and you go, oh wow, that's near where my auntie works, or that's over, you know, up north where my cousin lives or something like that, and you can actually start to it should be somewhere more high traffic than 404s, I think. I never get 404s anymore.
Well, you possibly don't see them very often because they get trapped and redirected to other things. You quite often, the 404 page just redirects to the general search page for the site or to the About Us page or something like that. Mm. So, I don't know. When I first heard this, I really liked the idea, and I thought, yeah, that's a cute idea. That really should be.
Yeah, I just want them to do more with it. I think if you're going to go there, keep going further. Get it in front of as many faces as possible, you know?
Hmm. Mm. Well, in America, of course, the tradition is to put missing persons' photos on milk cartons.
That's right.
Something that we've never... And that's really good because the milk carton sits on the breakfast table. Everybody sees it. Everybody looks at it. I mean, let's face it, you're desperate for something to take your mind off the mindless drudgery of eating your cornflakes.
Of eating cornflakes. Hello to all our friends who are our sponsors at Kellogg's. No, not really.
I still eat them.
It's something we don't do here. We don't use that space on our milk cartons in Australia, do we?
Not for that purpose, no. So
I'd love to look at statistics apropos the number of solved cases. From that sort of marketing, because that's incredibly invasive marketing. It's right under your breakfast table every morning.
It's in everyone's house.
It's in everyone's house. Yeah, changes on a daily basis almost.
And it's fairly easy to localise too, which is good. But although achieving that on the internet wouldn't be too hard with a little bit of an intelligent lookup for the geolocation.
That's what you'd have to do, isn't it? Because if I went to like theguardian.co.uk to do some research and I hit a 404 page on... Have you seen this person? They were last seen in Manchester. I go, well, no, that's not targeted at me, and it's not.
No, but it would be dead easy to do a 404 project database that you did a lookup, found that your IP address was in Victoria, and to have Victoria and to go to the part of the database that Victoria Police have contributed to, and to do that for most jurisdictions around the world.
Absolutely.
It wouldn't be an impossible project.
Mm. Notfound.org is the address to, if you're interested in that project, you can have a look. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Ron. I'm your host for this week's edition. You're also joined by the able-bodied Lena Van Deventer and Graham Callaghan on the panel. It's great to have you on board this week. Andrew sends his apologies and he'll be returning soon.
Or so he thinks.
Or so he thinks. Data retention. A parliamentary joint committee on intelligence and security is currently reviewing proposed changes to national security laws, with a particular focus on a number of pieces of Commonwealth legislation. These pieces of legislation apply not just to Commonwealth agencies, but to state law enforcement agencies as well. For example, if Victoria Police or the Queensland Police wants to obtain a telephone intercept, they have to comply with Commonwealth law. Now, there was a discussion paper actually released, which is called Equipping Australia Against Emerging and Evolving Threats. This is publicly available, and it's been released by the Attorney-General.
Emerging and evolving.
Emerging and evolving. Mm. The Honourable Nicola Roxon is the Attorney-General. The paper, she says, is intended to accompany consideration by the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security, with a focus on possible changes to the above legislation. So it's not proposed legislation, and that's one of the misnomers at the moment in the media. We're talking about it. Ms. Roxon wants to hear from all of the stakeholders and to find out if the existing legislation's okay. Do law enforcement or intelligence agencies need more power? Should they have less power? What's the state of play?
I believe the technical term for that is putting the feelers out.
There you go.
Yeah.
Putting the feelers out.
Putting the feelers out and seeing how everyone feels about it.
And talk about kicking an anthill.
Yep.
Let's just focus on data retention, because this paper and the panel is concentrating on a lot of things, concentrating on telephone interception warrants and all sorts of stuff. But we're getting a lot of feedback, and there's been a lot of discussion about data retention, which is keeping data, metadata, that's another term that we'll have to explain, mm-hmm. of people's web browsing habits, their phone calls, and those sorts of things. Or is it? I've read the proposal, or the discussion paper, I should say. Read the discussion paper. It's quite lengthy, but it's a good read. It's a bit disappointing because there are a lot of details that aren't in it. It's quite open-ended in a lot of places.
Ooh.
And that might be intentional just to get the
ball
rolling.
Probably appropriate at that level of a discussion paper.
Yeah.
If it's not proposed legislation, you'd hope it gets its details locked down by the time it gets to that stage.
Well, that's right. That's right. How long is data retained for now? A lot of people don't know this. Do you know? Does anyone know?
48 hours.
48 hours.
I just pulled that out of nowhere.
Usually 1 month on my Linux servers.
There you go.
That's usually the log rotate defaults.
There you go. The answer is that there is no legislation at the moment that governs the type of data that should be retained or must be retained or for how long.
Ooh.
There is no legislation. So if Telstra says, we had a problem with our billing system last week. Sorry, everyone's going to get free phone calls for a week. They're not liable under any legislation for breaking any data retention laws. There are no data retention laws.
Ooh.
And when police and law enforcement agencies make requests from telcos and ISPs, the telcos and ISPs say, usually, well, we'll give you what we can, but if the data's not there, the data's not there.
We've only got the last month, and that's all we keep.
Yeah, that's it.
And we don't keep the content, we only keep the request, or we only keep this amount of information.
That's right. Now, that's an important point, Graham. There are two things here. There is the information surrounding a phone call, for example, the length.
Yep.
Who was called? Who called?
Yep.
What cell tower the phone was logged onto, if it's a mobile phone.
Yep.
All that information, that is what they're referring to as metadata.
Yep. The different signal strengths on the different antennas, so you can try and work out where someone was, yep.
All that sort of information. At the moment, law enforcement and intelligence agencies can get that information. They don't need a warrant. They just call the ISP or the telco, and they have a pro forma, and they say, we'd like this information for a criminal investigation. And usually somebody of a certain office or rank has to sign a declaration that says it's needed for enforcement of the criminal law, and it's released.
Mm-hmm.
If a law enforcement agency or an intelligence agency wants content, they want the actual, the guts of what was in the email, or they want an audio recording of the phone call,
yep.
they have to go through the courts and apply for a warrant. Naturally enough, as you'd expect, law enforcement agencies and security agencies say, this is too onerous, we want this streamlined. And privacy advocates, consumer rights advocates, are saying, it's too broad at the moment, we want this tightened up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Can we find a happy medium? Do we have a happy medium at the moment? And should we all just walk away and leave it as it is? What are your thoughts?
No, Gary? Absolutely not.
What are your thoughts?
I don't think privacy advocates have a happy medium, do they?
Oh, Lena,
It's their way, or they're going to whinge about it. It's the same as civil libertarians.
You could say the same about our security organisations. Security
Absolutely,
agencies.
You could. Yes, they're always going to want everything.
I don't think there is a happy medium when it comes to something like this. It's quite absolute, isn't it?
That's the job of government, to find that happy medium.
They don't call it a job for nothing. That's hard.
It's hard, yeah. it's what's needed. Mm-hmm. We need to have reasonable controls so that our police forces and security agencies can do their jobs and achieve those things that we need them to achieve. But we also expect a certain amount of privacy and a certain amount of due process if our privacy is going to be invaded.
Yeah, it's got to be a risk-reward thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
In the Attorney General's discussion paper, she says that the government is considering data retention legislation possibly be introduced, and for the period of up to 2 years, that's what's being talked about by the government. Some police forces around Australia have said, no, that's not long enough, we want 5 years. And I think ASIO said, no, we want 10 years as a security organisation. We want much more than that. Whereas, again, privacy advocates are saying, we don't want any data retention, but if we have to have it, 2 years is too long. We want a month or 6 months.
Yeah.
So they're talking about that at the moment.
I don't know which one I lean towards at the moment. I think I'm in that lovely ignorant bliss where I don't really care either way because I don't know anything about it. And I might keep it that way because it's one less thing to care about right now.
One thing that's interesting in the discussion paper is, and one thing that civil liberties and privacy advocates haven't been advertising, is the government's proposal to actually reduce and limit law enforcement powers and access to data in some cases. In its discussion paper, Ms. Roxon clearly says government wishes to strengthen the safeguards and privacy protections found in one of the acts by reducing the number of agencies eligible to access communications information. And that's said twice in the proposal, which is good. So they're not just going in saying, no, we're going to start storing data and we're going to, you know, store it for 2 years and introduce that sort of law. They're actually looking at it sensibly and they're saying, well, at the moment, a lot of agencies, for example, Centrelink, Medicare, have access to some of this information under certain circumstances. Maybe they shouldn't. Maybe we need to review that.
Maybe if they do, if they suspect that there's some Medicare fraud going on, that Medicare should have to go to the police to investigate that rather than doing it themselves.
Exactly, Graham.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So, no, that's good. But, yeah, it's always going to be a difficult balancing act.
A criminal investigation's being hampered or a prosecution's failing at the moment because of an inability of law enforcement to obtain historic browsing data.
Or police able too easily to invade privacy without having to resort to getting a warrant, as you say, by being able to access metadata about phone calls and SMSs and emails and so on.
Absolutely. They're all valid questions. The Parliamentary Joint Committee is still sitting, and it will continue for some time yet. They're hearing from all police forces, security agencies. They're hearing from people like Electronic Frontiers Australia, privacy advocates. We hope that they'll make the right decisions ultimately. But I think the next step after this will be proposed legislation. And this will not be for years yet, I would expect. But it's good that we're talking about it, and it's good that people are aware of what's going on.
I think ambiguity in this kind of situation is not helpful for anyone.
Fear, uncertainty and doubt. Mm. We don't need it.
Yeah. No. Yep.
And as we hear things that are wrong, we will try to correct them, and we'll try to keep all of you abreast of what's happening and what's right and what's not, what's made up and what's factual. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is how to communicate with us if you're listening live.
Provided you're happy for the police to be able to find out that you've emailed us.
chat.techtalkradio.com.au. I'm Dr. On, your host for this week's edition. We're going to have a short break and we'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. confirmed new iPad mini to debut in October.
That sounds a bit WinFo.
Yes, this is good news.
You shouldn't be able to patent things that are either obvious or natural progressions from things that already exist.
Maybe it can loop through.
The red is Office, the green is Xbox.
It's going to make life harder rather than easier.
Well, now you've railroaded me.
Sorry.
On its face.
Whoa.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio. It's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, your host. In this week's edition, this is very exciting. Where's Andrew is the hashtag that's currently trending internationally on
Where
Twitter.
Where is Andrew?
Where is Andrew? Lena Van Deventer and Graham Callaghan, the panellists this week.
He doesn't love us anymore.
Oh, I know. You know what he's like. Sorry.
Maybe because I took 2 weeks off, he got jealous and wanted 2 weeks off.
Graham had a couple of weeks off, but not by choice.
No.
And I had a week off. There's a lot of it going about.
There is. Maybe it's just his turn.
Well, be what he thought.
I think he's done pretty well. He's hosted probably 39 shows in a row this year, and he's done all right. I think he's done a pretty good job.
Hmm.
Raspberry Pi, Lena. What is Raspberry Pi, and where can I get some?
Aha, Raspberry Pi. You can't eat it. Well, you could, but I don't think it would taste very good, and it would probably hurt your dental work.
I don't want to hear
somewhat.
That. I don't want to hear that.
Graham's got one as well, but he hasn't started playing with his yet. We've started playing with ours at home. I say we because I'm not steering this ship, one might say. I'm a good first mate, though. You can get one at raspberrypi.org. It's an ARM GNU, an ARMGNU/Linux box. An ARM GNU.
Yeah.
For about $25. And I say Linux box, but there is no box. It's just a little, I don't even want to say motherboard because it's so little.
Circuit board.
Yeah, but it's so little. It's probably smaller than my iPhone, I'd say, in terms of width and length. There's about a 12-week wait, but you can get some on eBay for a lot more expensive than $25 if you're really desperate. the Model B boards are a bit better, in my opinion.
Oh, so there's a new model board out, is it?
Yes, as Model A doesn't have an Ethernet port.
The Model Bs are the ones that are around, though, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. You can use a wireless USB dongle, but then you've only got one USB port to play with, and then you're kind of not getting the point of having one of these things is to make all these crazy different things that you can experiment with. So we're starting out. I think it'll eventually go towards a MAME cabinet or an arcade cabinet of some description. Last I heard was the boys pondering over an arcade coffee table.
Nice.
Don't know where exactly in the house that's going to go. We're experimenting with it as a media center first.
That's what a lot of people are going to use it for.
Yeah, just to sort of see what it's capable of, I think. Yeah. So set and forget is a priority for us at the moment where we've been setting it up. It's currently set up with an SD card for Xbox Media Center.
Okay, so XBMC.
XBMC.
Yep, there's actually a couple of different distros for it.
There are,
yeah. XBMC.
I really like XBMC. That's what we've got on the Apple TV at home, allegedly. After a few lines of code in a terminal window, the system installs an installer script written in Python. This is all coming up. And it sets up your SD card. Then you plug the Raspberry Pi into a monitor or the TV. And a keyboard and Ethernet connection and boot it up. Then you download the required files to create a bootable system. And it was so cute. If you follow me on Twitter, you heard me tweeting about it because I was gushing because I thought it was adorable. When you download the required files, it prompts you to go grab a coffee when the install is going to take a while.
Oh, nice. Did you grab a coffee?
Yes. So you know how sometimes when you install something, you're sitting there and you've got no real, like there may be a progress bar, but they don't really mean anything anymore, do they? So you never really know how long it's going to take. So they told you, go get a coffee. It'll mm-hmm. be about a coffee's worth of time. And it was. I thought that was adorable. Once that's complete, then it's a fully functioning Xbox media system, a media center system. Not bad for $25.
And when you say Xbox media center, this is an open source media center that yes. was written by enthusiasts to run on an Xbox that had been hacked.
That's right. That's right. It's not an actual Xbox product. No.
Just to clarify.
Yes. The bit that creeped me out, though.
It takes a lot to creep you out as well, just quietly.
It does take a lot.
So listen up.
I'm not phased very easily. There are ways in which you can control your Raspberry Pi when this is all set up. And one of them knocked me for six. First, using the free XBMC remote app on your iPhone, your iPad, or your Android.
Yeah,
we get that. Purchase a basic remote control with infrared dongle, blah,
yep.
blah.
It plugs into the USB. So the infrared receiver plugs into the USB port. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
cool. yep.
You can whip out your soldering iron and modify the IR receiver that came with the original Xbox remote.
Oh, why wouldn't you?
Or buy an adapter if that's too scary.
Graham's seen my soldering. I'd do a good job of that.
Or if you have a new enough TV, you can conjure some witchcraft.
Uh-oh.
Here we go.
I don't understand how this works at all, but clearly the dark arts are behind it. There could be no other explanation. It's called Consumer Electronics Control.
Oh, yeah.
And it means you can control devices over HDMI with a remote.
Yeah. Right.
Even if it's a remote from another device.
Did your brine explode?
My brine exploded all over the place.
Is
what
this,
even is?
Is this DLNA-esque technology, Graham? You kinda appear to be aware of this. I wasn't aware of this.
Please tell me what on earth this is, because it freaked me out.
Do you want Graham to shatter the illusion and explain the science? As if so, you can take your headphones off for 30 seconds?
Sure.
Or do you want to know how it works?
No. I don't know. I don't know if I want to know. Do I want to know? Yes, tell me how it works.
You don't need to worry about how it works. You can... The HDMI connection can send data in both directions. It can send instructions down to from the TV to your Raspberry Pi, as well as sending stuff from your Raspberry Pi to the TV.
Ah, see, I've never known that. I never knew that.
You can have a remote control talking to your TV, and then the TV can relay those commands for you to your Raspberry Pi.
So HDMI is bidirectional.
Has bidirectional control as a possibility. Yeah, that's what your consumer, whatever it was, is all about.
Consumer electronics, CEC.
Okay. Yeah.
Because most people would think, including myself, would think HDMI, as soon as you think HDMI, it's to get video from A to B.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, that's one of its jobs. Yeah, sure.
Mm. I didn't know it had other jobs. What else is it doing that we don't know about?
Well, it also gets audio from A to B.
It does. It does get audio, yes.
And it could also, but it can also get audio from B to A. So sometimes...
What? My remote can send audio to my telly?
No. For example, you might not always want the video and the audio to be going in the same direction.
Oh, right. Yes.
Because
that's so much less exciting than where I went my mind. My mind was about to be blown.
Welcome
and then it wasn't.
New segment called Tech Talk Think Tank with Lee Van Devitt.
So, for example, your TV might not be sort of the hub that controls your whole media experience in your... Like, if mine is in my setup, but yours might not be. You might have a fancy Dolby receiver that's the centre of your experience and everything gets switched through it. So there'd be times where you need to actually send audio from your if you're watching TV on the TV, you might want to send the audio down the HDMI cable to your receiver so it can find its way to your speakers.
So you
can send stuff in different directions for different purposes.
So do we all burn the universal remotes now?
No. No, they become more useful than ever.
Oh, good.
Because you...
Thank you for explaining that to me.
By using this witchcraft cleverly, you can achieve a lot of very clever stuff. And you can... I noticed that one of the distros that I used on the Raspberry Pi and not the other one, when I turned the Raspberry Pi off, would turn my TV off for me. Which I thought was really clever.
Yeah.
You don't want to watch TV anymore. You're turning off Raspberry Pi, turning off as well.
Actually, you don't turn off the Raspberry Pi, but it knows that there's no more video being sent, so it turns the TV off.
Yeah, that's clever.
Cool.
And it'll turn the TV back on when it's ready to talk to you again. So Yeah, it is clever.
Something on the chat would like to call you on something, Graham.
What did I say?
Name one example when you would want video and sound going in opposite directions.
I didn't get as far as working that out at the same time, but sometimes you're going to want to send video and sound from the receiver to the TV, and sometimes you're going to want to send it from the TV to the receiver, like in the example I gave.
Yeah, so, not necessarily simultaneously.
It's not impossible, but it, yeah. But I guess I probably didn't really mean at the same time, even if that's what I said. Sometimes I say things I don't really mean.
We've all been there. Well, that's exciting news, Lena. Very good. So you're giving it a good go.
We are.
Getting value for money?
Well, yeah, $25.
Have to go wrong. Yeah. That's great.
Not bad at all. I'll keep you updated on any different things that we experiment with.
Yeah, please
do. That'd be very good. Just be aware, though, with the $25, all you get is the bare circuit board.
Yes.
So you're going to have to spend a bit of money to actually make it do something useful. You're going to need to buy a power supply for it. You're going to need to buy an SD card for it. You're probably going to need to buy a USB mouse and keyboard for it. You might want to buy a USB wireless adapter for it. So there's all sorts of things you're going to want to plug into it to make it do what you want it to do.
It's very much a bare bones circuit board when you get it.
Yeah, yeah. The $25 is the center of the thing, and then you even need to buy a case to put it in if you want to make it in a case.
That's our
Otherwise,
next...
it just sits on the desk looking like a circuit board.
That's our next update.
A case. We'll look forward to the next update. Very good. NASA excitedly announced last week it's found evidence of water having once existed on Mars. And not just tiny molecules.
Yep.
A torrential water course, or words to that effect, once ran through the Gale Crater. Did you read about this?
A torrential water course?
Yeah.
Or a little bit of a trickling stream. A strickling dream?
A strickling We've all said stream. Things that we regret later.
I do every week.
I thought that was...
That'll be in the promo.
It will. You can bet your bottom dollar. It's a very exciting discovery.
Most likely it was water, but they haven't actually got the evidence to say that it definitely was water. But yes, most likely it was water, yeah.
The photographs look like a stream bed, like that you'd see on Earth.
Yep, that's exactly what it looks like.
Very exciting.
And they've jumped to the inevitable conclusion, just like in the in centuries gone past, people saw things that looked exactly like canals and just assumed that that was what they were.
Well, that's true too. They don't try and land spacecraft near the Cydonia region anymore, do they? That always ended badly. That's where the face is on Mars, you know, the alien,
alien
pyramid thing.
Okay.
Alien pyramids and...
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Sorry, Graham. Dick Smith Electronics sold for $20 million last week. The retail electronics institution, Dick Smith, has been sold for $20 million. Anchorage Capital Partners, a private equity firm, will buy the entire business, including 4,500 staff and all 325 stores.
Hang on, they can't actually buy the staff. That's...
They have bought the staff. The staff have been packaged and in DSC fashion shrink-wrapped and packaged in threes. So you can't just walk in and buy one staff. You have to buy a packet of three. That was Tandy that did that, wasn't it?
Mm.
I want to buy a
Tandy
resistor.
Tandy and Dick Smith are the same people now.
They are. I want to buy a resistor. Well, you can't buy one, but we'll sell you a shrink-wrapped packet of three.
It was a cardboard packet of five.
It was. You're quite right. You're quite right. Was this, $20 million, it sounds like a lot of money to you and me, but it's not really a lot of money, is it, for a Dick Smith electronics chain? Although it has been losing money for a long time, and Woolworths has been trying to offload it for a long time. Staff layoffs are inevitable, say analysts. It's unlikely all stores will remain open.
Well, if it's losing money, then the only reason for buying it is to make changes to start making money.
Yeah.
You're not going to buy something that's losing money and leave it as it is.
And leave it as it is. No, that's right. I guess there's like fierce competition online now. I mean, if you look at the electronics store in its day, before internet, think back 20 years ago when it did a roaring trade, it's probably a lot's changed now, and they just have to adapt. They have to focus on online sales, I suspect, and better profit margins.
Dick Smith is an interesting case because it changed its character completely several years ago, or possibly over the course of several years. I mean, when I was a lot younger than I am now, Dick Smith was the hobbyist shop.
That's right.
It was where you went to buy your soldering irons and your resistors.
That's
what
we're joking about, the electronic components.
And all that sort of stuff.
Which you wouldn't do now, would you?
Well, you wouldn't go to... No, you'd go to JCAR for that. You wouldn't go to Dick Smith for that. But you're supposed to go to Dick Smith now to buy your TV and your, you know, iPod and your headphones.
Yeah, your surround sound system and your Kindle e-reader.
Consumer stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yep.
So they kind of changed focus and perhaps lost focus.
Mm.
But, of course, the hobbyist market is very limited. There's only so far you can go with that, so who knows?
Well, we hope that there's some good news for the staff anyway, for 4,500 staff. But
yeah, hopefully, I'm betting there won't be good news for all of them.
Well, not for all of them, no. Yeah, we'll keep across that, obviously, and let you know what's happening once Anchorage Capital Partners take over.
Mm.
Life after death for MySpace. Graham said at the start of the program, MySpace, oh, that was that social network that used to have embedded media players. He's typing MySpace.com in his web browser. The new owner, Justin Timberlake, who bought the network. Really?
Swoon.
Says the entire site will be rebuilt from scratch.
As the token female on the program. Swoon.
No, you're not token in any way, Lena.
I'm legally obliged as a female to swoon whenever someone says Justin Timberlake.
I am so disappointed.
Come on, he's funny.
$35 million he paid for it in June last year. Analysts say MySpace will need to offer something different to establish social media to attract people back.
Mm. They did it. Justin Timberlake.
Are you going to set up, or have you set up a MySpace account?
I think I might go back and check it out.
Really?
Yeah.
Have a look, see what it's all about?
Because the only reason I left MySpace was to go to Facebook because I was sick of everyone having pink flashing glitter and everything and the auto-playing music thing starting on MySpace.
It's Graham's favourite.
Yeah, so that's the only reason I went to Facebook was because I was like, hey, look, it's white. Oh, yay. And we can't change the backgrounds and we can't do it. And now we're starting to change backgrounds on Facebook.
MySpace says it's a leading social entertainment destination powered by the passions of fans and aimed at a Gen Y audience.
To be serious for a moment, the place that MySpace has always had has been the music industry.
Yeah.
And to some extent related industries like, you know, comics and so on.
Mm.
That's where it's always had its place. I can only assume that by keeping that focus is the only way they're going to stay alive.
And I think that's why Justin Timberlake grabbed it.
Yeah, well, that kind of fits. Is he a musician, is he?
Yes.
Oh, good. In the broadest definition.
He is. He's a very good musician. He's done very good things.
Wouldn't mind a slice of his paycheck.
No.
Every week.
Well, there you go. That's
they must be doing
true.
Something right, huh?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Ron, your panellists this week, Lena Van Deventer and Graham Callaghan. Adam Turner is not a panellist this week, but he is an independent technology journalist. He recently flew to New York. It was cheaper for him to actually hop on a plane, IRL, buy Adobe Photoshop and fly home than simply to buy it locally.
Wow.
That, however, is not the only reason. Well, it's not even a reason why I went to New York. I just made all that up. Would you ever consider buying a Motorola Razr handset?
No. I had one.
Okay.
Ugh.
Graham, any opinion? Ever used one?
No, it's been a long time since my very first phone was a Motorola, but not a Razr. But
while Adam was in New York, he did speak to Motorola's Rick Osterloh about three...
Ocelot?
Yes, Rick Ocelot. Oh, no, that's not nice. Make fun of people's names, although we do it all the time. Motorola has released not one, not two, but three new Razr handsets. And, of course, Adam was on the ground to find out all about them.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
This week's View from the Couch comes from my recent trip to New York, and it's a snippet from my chat with Motorola Mobility Senior Vice President of Product Management, Rick Osterloh. We're talking about Motorola's three new Razr handsets, which they launched on the day, but also, more interestingly, about the relationship between Motorola Mobility and its new parent company, Google. Other voices you'll hear include Australian tech journalist Alex Kidman. Rick Osterloh from Motorola starts by answering a question about the decision to go with three new handsets, while many vendors now tend to offer people less choice.
We definitely believe in more focus, and that's probably one of the biggest changes that the company's going through now, transitioning to private ownership under Google, which is we'll be focused on smartphones, we'll be launching fewer products, but with bigger focus and bigger investment, and we think there'll be better products as a consequence. And we have three of them because we think there's really distinct groups of people who are buying the three different razors.
You talked about all of them being upgradable to Jelly Bean.
Uh-huh.
What's the strategy behind not launching with Jelly Bean? I would have thought that'd be a really good strategy.
Yeah, it's really just timing issues. I mean, we're going to make Jelly Bean available as soon as we possibly can. But in the product development cycle, it just, Jelly Bean came not exactly at the perfect time to have them available when we were launching these. So, what we're doing instead is we're going to launch the upgrade as soon as we possibly can, and you might have seen it running out there on our phones, so we're getting pretty close.
Does that then leave it at the mercy of Telstra to get the update?
Generally, we work with our operator partners, yeah, on getting the upgrade out to users.
Are you giving them a bit of a kick up the arse? Because that's one of the things that people are really dirty on about Android, is they have to wait so long for these things.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we want to improve, for sure. I mean, I think it's not... Users expect upgrades fast, and we want to give it to them. And so it's definitely a pain point that we're trying to help solve.
I mean, ultimately, we do... If you forgive me for a second, we do have to cooperate with the carriers in individual markets, and there's always going to be a testing process with them, and we want to make sure that they're happy with how it's performing and how they're using and respond. It's a big priority for us, and I think we'll be working as much as we can with all the partners to try to make sure that the upgrades come through as soon as possible. It's something that is obviously important to all of our customers everywhere. So we'll do what we can. Sorry.
Does the shift to private give you... Do you think that shift will give you more of a window for faster upgrades in the future?
I think that's part of the thinking going forward is how do we design these phones for long-term ownership and for upgradability. I mean, that's a really important aspect. And frankly, before, Motorola, that wasn't necessarily the most important thing top of mind. Most of the phones can be upgraded, but some can't. And it's just a change in thinking going forward.
But do you think your relationship with Google will mean that when they announce the next version of Android, Motorola might have to jump on your...
Well, we won't... No, so no. We won't have a per se jump on anyone because of a structural reason. That's not going to happen. We actually have quite a bit of independence. And in particular, we have a kind of a firewall procedure between us and the Android team. So we're participating like any other OEM in the Android ecosystem. We don't have access to code before anyone else. I think what we do have is that we've made a choice that we will focus on Android exclusively. And so we're going to do the best that we possibly can to get Android onto our phones, new versions of Android onto our phones as quickly as we can. And that, I mean, that's just a strategic choice as opposed to some structure advantage we have.
What's the strategic advantage? I would have thought, if both businesses are owned by Google, they'd want to make the best of that arrangement.
I think the key thing is Google wants to participate in the mobile business in a significant way. They think that they can do that both by owning an OEM and by having Android, and it's really important. I mean, it's very important strategically for Google to make sure that the Android ecosystem stays a fair playing field. That's sort of a key design principle for Android, was it's open and that everyone can participate, and it'll spread worldwide as a consequence. And so nothing will change in that regard. It's just Motorola is another big bet that the company's placing. There's obvious benefits around intellectual property as well that comes with owning Motorola, which is a huge issue in the industry now. And so that was obviously a key factor in acquiring the company.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The Motorola Razr. Now, Lena says that, she used to own one. Mm-hmm. I have actually used one. The thing that used to drive me crazy, I'm sure it's been redesigned, and as Adam's just explained, the new operating system and everything else, but the texting used to drive me crazy.
Mm. And when I had the flippy one, and it always used to pinch me whenever I closed it.
Ow.
Yeah.
Really?
I hated that phone with a passion.
It was quite a nice phone in to feel like in your hand, but the old one, but to use, it was a bit awkward.
I actually went from Razr to iPhone. I think that was, yeah, that was the last non-iPhone phone I had. And normally I hand me down phones to my mum or my dad because I churn through phones quite fast. Well, I did before the iPhone. And I wouldn't give it to my mum or my dad. I said, I'm not doing that to you.
Friends don't let friends use Motorola razors.
Yeah, friends don't let friends do that.
But that's the old razor. That's not the new
razor. That's the old one. Yeah. That's the old one. That's, we'll wait and see what the new one's like.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
The free play plague is over. I always get sick after free play every year.
Oh, I was about to say, what free play plague? That's not very nice, but you were of illness.
I was.
You were with illness.
I was. I think I slept for about 40 hours when I got home.
Yikes.
I was very tired. All that learning in one spot, all those people that I love talking about games, which I love, it was very intense.
You were speaking on not one, but two panels.
I was.
And you did an excellent job as well, I might say, if
Thank
I do say
you.
So myself.
Thank you very much.
Very entertaining. Tell us a little bit about the panels you're on.
I was on two panels on the Saturday. This was part of the Saturday and Sunday conference program of the Free Play Weekend. The first panel was called The Path.
Nice.
And that was talking about everyone's private journey as a creator and as a maker of games and how, as an emerging practitioner, that means someone who's in the first 10 years of their career, that I have a different way of looking at it as, say, seasoned veterans do, as well as the fact that I've come into game development at a time when there's less studios, so I have a different way of approaching things and a different way of getting things done that, say, someone who's come up in the studio system would see.
Sure.
So it's all different angles on how you come across. And there was two emerging practitioners and two veterans on the panel, and it was really good. There was Morgan Jaffet from Defiant Development up in Brisbane.
Yep.
Trent Custers from League of Geeks down here in Melbourne. And then there was Fiona Murray. She was the other emerging practitioner. She works at Surprise Attack here in Melbourne.
Surprise Attack!
Surprise Attack! And that was great. So we all had some different ways of looking at things, but then very similar things at the same time, which was really nice. And it was just goes to show there's different ways to making a game, and everyone's got a different way of getting there, and it's your personal relationship with your craft and how different that can be.
It's great.
Yeah,
and
that
was
fun.
The second panel?
And the second panel was the ethics of game design. Yeah.
I attended that one. It was very interesting.
I wish I'd attended that one.
Yeah, it was really, really good.
That was covering things like accessibility in games, not offending people. And like inclusion of diverse people from diverse backgrounds and how that benefits the product at the end, and all that sort of thing. Yeah, it was really good. And there was also that's horrible. I can't remember her last name. Tanya, amazing Tanya, because I just called her Amazing Tanya all weekend, so I can't actually remember her last name.
Tanya, who is
really
amazing.
Bad. Tanya, who is amazing. She's a lawyer, and she's doing a lot with game development in terms of games for social change, so that was really exciting. There was a lot of talk about using sport to then kick off other conversations and that kind of thing, which was really cool, and video games as well as sports games. And who else was on there? Jeff Brand was on there with me, who has a giant brain. And
it was a big brains trust, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And Dan Clayton as well, who's a developer here in Melbourne. It was really good. I was blessed to be on panels with some very smart people.
That's good. And you got some good feedback too.
Yeah,
And the free play as an institution got some good feedback as well. Everyone was very happy with how it worked out.
Yeah, it went really well this year, and as we all hoped it would. I was on the program advisory committee this year. I was an associate producer last year, and I decided to not do that again this year, just to try something different. And I'm glad I did, because you do look at it from a different angle.
Yeah.
And, it's important to put games firmly in the arts, where they belong.
Absolutely.
Instead of looking at it as a technology all the time.
Yeah.
It's nice to look at it as an art form and as something that can be seen as something someone has a personal relationship with. Yeah.
What gaming news this week?
Valve.
Yeah, I know them. Those guys.
You may have heard of them.
Yeah. Responsible for me losing about 4,800 hours of my life, but that's okay.
That's about right.
Yeah.
Valve Hardware.
Oh, yes,
this has been a rumor going around for quite some time now.
Yep.
Entering beta next year.
Really?
What?
Really? Because this has been
what sort of hardware?
A rumor up until now.
What sort of hardware?
Gamers may get a chance to go hands-on with Valve's first foray into the hardware scene within the next year. Speaking to Engadget, Valve research and development employee Jerry Ellsworth said she was hopeful to launch an external beta test. External. Of proprietary hardware sometime in the next year.
Nice.
Ellsworth was decidedly short on details. Bah, concerning just what this hardware will be, saying that only her team at Valve aims to create a hardware solution for control barriers.
Right.
In Steam games. She said this hardware will be tied to Steam and is in development alongside Steam's new big picture mode.
So this will be a Xbox or PlayStation 3 controller for Valve games that plugs into your PC.
Maybe.
With joysticks and buttons and places to put your thumb.
If they wanted to do something non-spectacular, which isn't really Valve's style, let's be honest. you can already plug an Xbox controller into Steam games now, so it wouldn't be anything amazing if they just brought out a new controller. So I think it's something a bit better. Elsewhere, Ellsworth revealed that internal tests of the hardware are currently ongoing with prototypes available to staffers at Valve's headquarters.
Yep.
Ooh.
Yep, yep.
Gets everyone very excited.
It does.
Regarding Valve's wearable computing efforts, Ellsworth said this hardware is much further off.
Okay.
She said gamers should not expect to see such products for another 2 to 5 years.
Oh, so we're not going to see a helmet and stereo vision and all that sort of 3D stuff, no?
No, they might Half-Life 3 that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you say vaporware?
Yep. The Sony game unit, you might get a kick out of this.
Yes.
I have been quite mean to Sony over the last year, but I think that's rightfully so. The Sony game unit aims to be profitable this year.
Wow, Sony.
What have they been aiming to do in the past?
Oh, dear. Sony, yeah. Come on.
Guys. You should be doing that every year. Sony's banking heavily on its PS3 business to help return its game unit to profitability this year.
They're the Nokia of games units.
Yeah, a little bit. I think we will be profitable this year, Andrew House told Reuters.
Oh, no, really?
told Reuters at the Tokyo Game Show this week. We have a growing installed base, growing connectivity of the PS3.
I don't think profitable means what he thinks it means.
No, I don't think so either. Earlier this week, Sony announced its super slim new PS3 model. The 250 gig model bundled with Uncharted 3 is available after September 25th for $270, which is a great deal if you haven't already got a PS3.
Nice.
The 500 gig version is coming with Assassin's Creed 3 in October, and I don't know how much that's going to cost just yet.
How much was the PS3, did you say?
$270.
Oh,
for the super slim.
I paid a lot more than that for mine too.
I paid $840.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And you've got a good one. We've spoken about your one before that actually plays PS2 games.
Backwards compatible.
Yeah, mine does not do that. I missed the boat.
Kickstarter projects must now disclose risks.
Oh, yes.
Ooh. I've talked about quite a few Kickstarter campaigns over the last year or so, one of them being the big Double Fine game, but also the Ouya more recently. Ouya.
Ouya. Ouya.
I just like saying Ouya on the radio. Kickstarter campaigns will now require creators to divulge and discuss risks and challenges associated with their projects. Beginning immediately, all Kickstarter pages will include a risks and challenges section where creators must not only disclose these issues but also discuss how effectively prepared they are to overcome them.
Nice.
Kickstarter said it added the new section to make sure the creators' projects are in development. They actually wrote a blog post called Kickstarter is not a store.
Okay, yep.
So that implies to me they're a little bit mad.
Yep.
according to this, in addition to this risks and challenges section, Kickstarter also announced new hardware and product design guidelines. Now, this is, I think, in direct response to the Ouya.
Yep.
The company said creators are now prohibited from providing product simulations and are only able to display products performing actions that they are able to in their present state.
Yep.
Additionally, product renderings have been banned. So unless you have a working prototype, you can't put it in your Kickstarter.
Gotcha.
Because they're not a store.
Where can we go to find out more about Ouya? Is there a...
I think it would be ouya.com, but I'm not 100% sure. I've just been reading it through all the Kickstarter and all the press.
That's right. Is that the best place to read it, to follow what's going on?
I think so, yeah. Okay, it's not ouya.com. That's a Chinese Tumblr.
do not go to that web address.
Do not go to that one. Seems safe for work, but still, maybe not. they have said that if a project fails to come to market after a successful campaign, the company would not get involved in refunds, and also that the new terms and conditions will not be retroactive, so Ouya doesn't have to sort of go back and redo everything. Notch refuses to certify Minecraft for Windows 8.
Notch.
He spit venom at Microsoft and its new Windows 8 operating system on Twitter. He said that he received an email from Microsoft asking for help to certify Minecraft for Windows 8, to which he responded with, "I told them to stop trying to ruin the PC as an open platform," he said. "I'd rather have Minecraft not run on Windows 8 at all than to play along. Maybe we can convince a few people to not switch to Windows 8 that way."
That would be a deal breaker for me.
No Minecraft.
No Windows 8.
Yeah.
That would be the deal breaker.
Yep. "Hey, Microsoft," he said, followed it with this, "Hey, Microsoft, you might be a big and scary American company that likes secrets and meetings and such, but I love working with you."
Lena, thank you very much for the update this week. You'll be back with more games news next week.
Yes.
I'm Dr. Ron. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Lena Van Deventer, Graham Callaghan is the panel this week. Gadget, website, application, odd spot of the week coming right up.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra is the only carrier that can do location-based early warning.
Yes, make a sweeping generalisation.
By here. Absolutely.
Oh, please tell me they printed the CCV as well.
Yeah.
The tiles change to offer you updates at a glance.
You sound like a climate change skeptic. What did you think I was going to say?
Who knows?
Time is an illusion.
Lunchtime, doubly so.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Celebrating the emergence recently of a few true full-frame digital cameras, this week's gadget is the Nikon D600 digital SLR camera.
Nice.
Full frame means the sensor is the same size as a normal 35mm film frame, improving image quality, reducing noise, and simplifying the way we understand which lens to use.
Oh, I like that.
But yeah, so do I. It features a 24.3MP full frame sensor, a 39-point autofocus system, native sensitivity of 100 to 6400 ISO, expandable up to as much as 25,600 ISO.
What?
That's what I said, yep. Two SD card slots and a price tag of around $2,100 for the body only. That's the Nikon D600 full-frame digital SLR camera.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
When I was searching for a website, I couldn't believe that we hadn't covered this one before, and I hope I'm not doing a repeat. I'm hoping that the document I was searching was complete.
We trust you.
Snopes.com.
Yay.
The Urban Legends reference pages.
I don't think we've had Snopes as a
there
website.
You go. It's one of my favourite pages on the internet, and it's been there since forever. Snopes is run by Barbara and David Mickelson, a California couple who met online on the alt.folklore.urban news group. They set up in 1995. Since then, the website has been working to keep us informed about a huge number of extraordinary stories we encounter online, helping us to work out which to believe and which are complete nonsense.
Yeah, which are urban myths.
Yeah. Can you really get a free iPad by clicking there?
Yeah.
No.
Did Morgan Freeman die in a snowboarding accident last Thursday?
Did Neil Armstrong really say, "Good luck, Mr. Gorski"?
That one's there. Did Mitt Romney wonder why you can't open the windows on aeroplanes? And
yes, he did, unfortunately.
And
yes,
he did. Will the Windows Live Update virus burn your whole hard drive? To find out, go to www.snopes.com.
Tech Talk Radio, App of the Week.
Finnish app developer Rovio of Angry Birds fame has released a spin-off of the Angry Birds series titled Bad Piggies.
Bad Piggies.
In the hope of continuing their amazing success in the mobile games arena. Although the general look and feel of the game is familiar, in Bad Piggies the user takes the side of the pigs to build wild and wacky contraptions to help the pigs reach their goals. On the iPhone, you can get it for 99 cents. The high-definition iPad version is $2.99. And on Android, it's free but splattered with ads. I don't know why Android people don't get the option to pay and remove the ads, but that's another story.
I'll have to load it up and try it.
Hours of trial and error fun building and crashing contraptions until you achieve the goals of each level. Rovio's latest game is Bad Piggies.
Bad Piggies. There it is. That's our app of the week.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf! You can't handle the truth.
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
I'm a bit scared. I'm a bit scared.
United States app developer RC3 has filed a preemptive lawsuit asking a Florida court to rule that their game titled Joustin' Beaver is protected as free speech under the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. Their action followed a cease and desist order sent to them by Justin Bieber's lawyers, asking the company to remove the game from Google's Play and Apple's iTunes app stores.
You crazy Americans and your concept of free speech. What even is free speech?
In the app, a beaver sporting a hairstyle, which may be familiar to some people, floats down a river using his jousting skills to ward off paparazzi-like photo hogs. Signing autographs
to the punnery
and avoiding the whirlpool of success.
I've heard enough.
The Florida judge dismissed the case because Mr. Bieber doesn't live in Florida, and we await news on the next chapter of this saga.
That is Tech Talk Radio, the week that's been. We've run over time and we'd love to keep talking for another hour, but we won't. Remember, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Lena, thank you very much for this week. Graham, thank you very much also for doing a superlative job at the end of the program right there. Don't forget our email newsletter, hashtag Where Is Andrew on Twitter, and visit our website, www.techtalkradio.com.au. I'm Dr. Ron. Until next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter. Join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.